What is up, everybody, and welcome in to another live edition of the Return of the Roar podcast. For those who are not currently aware, me and Frankie have been doing this thing, going live on the Sacktown Sports 1140 YouTube and Twitter pages every Thursday at around this time, 10 o'clock, to give you the news or the newest in Sacramento Kings news. I don't know where I was going with
it's
that.
News.
But where's news? Sure. We go live every Thursday at 10 o'clock to talk Sacramento Kings and to record our beautiful little podcast that we like to call the Return of the Roar podcast. We are coming to you on this Thursday following a nice little mini series that the Sacramento Kings had with the Denver Nuggets, the current number two seed in the Western Conference. The Kings split the two games. Domantas Sabonis doesn't play the first of the two with a right thumb injury. It was a last minute decision, or last hour, I guess, decision whether or not he was going to play last night. He ended up playing to really a lot of people's surprise. To nobody's surprise, though, Domantas Sabonis, when he did play, absolutely showed up. 30 points, 10 rebounds, extending his NBA leading double-double number. I don't know what that's currently sitting at. I just know that he leads. He still is leading the NBA in double-doubles. The man,
I think,
who
25.
Leads, 25, something like that. It's definitely,
I think so.
That sounds about right. The voice you're hearing, for those not watching, is my co-host, as always, Frankie Cardicelli. Frank, coming off this nice little back-to-back against Denver, how you feeling?
Christopher, everybody live in the YouTube chat, everybody listening at home, happy Thursday. Rainy day. Rainy Thursday. A lot of rain coming in, which is kind of crazy. It feels nice. You know, last night was a fun game. I asked everybody after the game that was around if it was the most exciting game this season. Obviously, you have the Orlando game. That game was a lot of fun for a lot of different reasons. Fox with the near half court buzzer beater, but a game that the Kings really had no control of from the beginning. They just completely got ragdolled out of the gates, and it seemed like it was going to be a laugher. I mean, Kings were down by 19, I think, with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. It just was one of those games that the Kings, they stole it. I mean, if you really think about it, they stole that game. They had no right to win that game. They didn't deserve to win the game, but they, as bad as they were defensively, they turned things around when they needed to most. And there are guys that came up big, of course, like Malik Monk, Sabonis. We're going to talk a lot about him. De'Aaron Fox with another good game on the homestand. But even the other guys like Davion Mitchell and Casey Okpala, who had huge defensive possessions. If you watch the last 3-4 minutes of regulation, Davion Mitchell had he deserves a lot of credit for forcing turnovers because Denver got sloppy down the stretch and the Kings capitalized. So is it a pretty win? No, but I mean that win goes in like the others, a couple of blowout wins the Kings had, they all count the same. And it's a good feeling, especially after the fact that the Kings were on the other side of things on Tuesday. They jumped out to a 20-point lead and it seemed like they were going to come out and punch the Nuggets in the mouth, but especially without Domantas Sabonis. But Sabonis, he's back. The Kings are winning, and I'm feeling good today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to your point, Davion, who earned himself Defensive Player of the Game chain last night, I thought him and Casey Okpala were the biggest momentum flippers in that game last night. I mean, the Kings, for the entire game, pretty much couldn't stop the Denver Nuggets. And then in that fourth quarter, you saw Jordy Fernandez stick with Davion Mitchell down the stretch. Casey Okpala got a lot of minutes in last night's game. And I think just their defensive effort really was what ended up turning things around, because, I mean, it was very clear that the Kings were not going to win that game unless they were finally able to figure out how to slow down the Denver Nuggets offense, which was just, I mean, I think they were shooting like 65% or something like that at halftime, shot 70% in the first quarter. They just couldn't miss all night. And you know, it's a make or miss league, and Denver was not missing anything. And for a while, the Kings couldn't make anything either. A huge night for the Kings. I think it has to be mentioned on the offensive end. Frank, I cannot remember a time when I've seen three players go for 30 plus points in a game, and that's exactly what happened last night. Domantas Sabonis, De'Aaron Fox, and Malik Monk all finished with 30-plus points. Basketball Reference put out a great tweet after saying that it was the first time since 1971 that three Kings players had scored 30-plus in the same the last three, which I've heard of Otis Birdsong, but Phil Ford and Scott Wedman.
I'm Kings legends.
I'm sorry, big fella, but I'm not familiar with your game. I cannot speak on, any of those two. I've heard of Otis Birdsong because he holds a bunch of Kings records.
The slander.
Five, but yeah,
the Otis Birdsong slander.
But yeah, so that just speaks to how incredible of a feat that was. I would have guessed that like maybe once during like that DeMarcus, Rudy Gay, Isaiah Thomas season, it might have happened. I remember they were notorious for averaging 60 points between the three.
That was my thought too. Yeah, right. I don't know how that didn't happen.
Those three, right?
Yeah, I mean, it honestly is. It came out of nowhere, but you three players going for 30. I mean, and I think that I heard from someone that works with the Kings that it was the first time it's happened in the NBA in 3 years since the Clippers did it. I think Kawhi, Paul George, not Kawhi. It was Paul George, Lou Williams, and I think Montrezl Harrell. That was the first time in 2 years since that has happened. So Malik Monk, who came out and said on Tuesday he needed to be better, had to be better. He was better. 33 points. That is something that the Kings really needed, especially from a guy that I think he was averaging 9 points per game on 30% shooting coming into last night's action during the homestand. So obviously you want to see De'Aaron Fox keep his hot streak going. You want to see Domantas Sabonis continue to be the all-star that he's been. But having that other guy, that other piece that can complement Fox and Sabonis, sometimes it's Harrison Barnes, sometimes it's Kevin Herter, sometimes it's Keegan Murray. Last night it was Malik Monk, and he did it in a big way. And that's something that he really needed, just not just for the team, for himself to get going.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Monk has been that guy all year, though. I mean, you know, you mentioned that they just, Sabonis needed help, Fox needed help. I mean, this is just, to me, just speaks to the depth. You never, I think, I didn't get to hear the post-game press conference because I had to do the recap show, but I'd heard Jordy say essentially something to the effect of that's what makes this team so dangerous, is that you have your two all-stars in Fox and Sabonis, and then you just have that X-factor guy that you don't know who it's going to be on a given night. Two nights ago, we saw Kevin Herter have his game. Last night, you saw Malik Monk with a 33-piece. It could be Harrison Barnes, who has also had a nice string of games here in December. Keegan Murray, you hope eventually could be that X-factor guy. We've seen Trey Lyles have games like that. So, I mean, you know, it just speaks to the level of depth to this team. And, you know, last night was one of those where I'm again reminded of just the incredible depth of this team. And like, you know, the other day, I think it was the Laker game where they had the four starters with 20 plus points. And then Sabonis with the triple double. It's just like, I don't know, man. It really makes you think, like, we saw earlier in the season, like this offense felt like it was something special, like it was a going to be a top five offense in this league guaranteed. And then we've seen them really struggle shooting the basketball these past couple weeks. It's kind of almost been like a month or so now that they haven't been able to hit, especially from the perimeter. But on a night like last night, you're just reminded of like just how explosive these guys can be, and to hang against that Denver team. That's one of, I mean, Frank, I don't know about you, bro, but I do not want to play Denver for a long, long time after this little two game stretch. Like, they're just so good. And Jokic causes so many problems for everybody. To me, the story of these two games that I took out of this was Nikola Jokic is by far the best player in the NBA right now. I mean, we saw Giannis in the matchup problems that he causes, but just, you know, the gravity that Jokic has, he's really like a combination of like Shaq and LeBron James sometimes. Like, he's just so unstoppable when he gets in the paint, but then also to have his passing ability, it's just like there's nothing you can do about him. Like, the Nuggets also at this point know how to play off of him. You see them just countless backdoor cuts that were killing the Kings all night. His screening ability, I mean, him and Bones Highland in the pick and roll, I think De'Aaron Fox is going to have nightmares about for the next couple weeks. And you know, just such an incredible team. And then not to mention Michael Porter Jr., who has 49 points over two days, just absolutely torched the Kings. Like, I'm so good off of playing Denver for a while here now.
Yeah, I'm good off that as well. And
they didn't even have three of their rotation guys last night either.
They're a problem. Like, they're finally putting it together. I think this is a year they're actually going to be one of the better teams in the West. I mean, the West is so close this year, and Denver has been the best team so far, and I don't see them really slowing down. I mean, last night, the Kings are a good team. I mean, that's not just us being homers. They are a team. They're well received around the NBA. They're a good team, and without Aaron Gordon, without Bruce Brown, without Jamal Murray, they came out last night and they almost beat a Kings team that was, I won't say 100% because Sabonis is not 100%, but I think the Kings are okay not playing them for a while, and it's going to be a while before they do play them again. They play them on the last game of the season. That is the next time these two teams meet up. So the Kings got their Nuggets fix in. They split a two-game set, and I think they're okay with maybe facing a Denver team on the last game of the year. We'll see if that game even means anything. If depending on where these teams are, and I'm not going to get ahead of myself, there's a chance that the Kings and Nuggets both don't have their better players playing, and maybe it's a game the Kings need a lot, and maybe Jokic is sitting. Who knows? So that's an advantage to me right there. It's nice that the Kings have to play them for a while. Jokic too. It just seemed like every time he got the ball last night, and I think he finished, I have the numbers right here. He finished last night with 40 points.
47-6. Yeah.
15-24 from the field. I don't know if you have that shot plot in front of you, the shot by zone, but I guess the shot zone, if we can look what Jokic did in and around the rim, he shot 7 of 11 inside the key, 6 of 7 at the rim. So when he got the ball in 10 to 15 feet, my heart just sunk. And when he got that last shot off.
I was just about to say that. I think the only time he missed was somehow the last shot or the second to last shot of the game for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so 6 of 7 at the rim. That wasn't necessarily at the rim. That was somewhere in between. I think that was like a 10, 12 foot shot. But
yeah, it was like right in front of the free throw line.
Yeah. But either way, 7 of 11 in the key. I mean, one of those misses, you know, 65%, one of those misses was in the most crucial point in the game. And it was a look that he knocked down several times already. So when he got that look, and the Kings have been playing really good defense, but there's not much you can do about that. Like, Domantas Sabonis tried to contest, but there really isn't that much you can do. I mean, Jokic has the ball literally 13 feet in the air. It's
up here, yeah. Like, I rewatched the game when I got home last night, and specifically on the shot we're talking about, the winning attempt from three, but the one that was in the paint right before that. Yeah, like Domas completely Bones gets dribble penetration, gets into the paint, finds Jokic, I mean, right in that spot where he has just been killing the Kings all day, right at the top of the key, right in front of the free throw line. And yeah, Sabonis flies out to him. He honestly makes a little bit of contact with his chest. You might have been able to call a foul there, but there was just it was going to be a make or miss. He's either going to make this heartbreaking shot, or what ended up happening was he just clanked it off back rim.
Carmichael Dave in the chat with a good comparison, saying that shot was equivalent to the Marcus Smart shot in Celtics was very equivalent. Yeah, that thing hung on the rim and just I thought it was going down.
It literally hung on the rim. That thing like bounced. Hung and then fell off. That's a great comparison. And like it was similar energy too, because I remember that Celtics game as well, and like, oh my gosh, like it was to the wire. I mean, that was an incredible game last night.
But the Jokic shot, I mean, once that didn't go in, I think, did you feel a little more confident that the Kings could pick up a win? Because when that shot didn't go down, and all the shots that were going down for Denver earlier, how they were shooting this the hell out of the basketball. They're 70%, 65% most of the game. When those shots late in the game started to not fall, and KCP airballs a three after he'd had a decent going there, and Jokic misses a shot that he's been shooting a high percentage at all night. When he missed that shot and the Kings got a chance to really, I mean, they had a chance to win the game at the time with like 4 or 5 seconds left. Did that kind of put that feeling of, okay, Kings are going to pull this out?
Well, at that point, they still had to seal it because Jokic misses that. There's 2.8 seconds, I believe. Trey Lyles gets a great rebound on that miss, by the way. Really skied for it, gets the rebound, And then honestly, at that point, I'm thinking it's going to overtime. I mean, there's not too many times where you think that the Kings are just going to nail a game winner. And, you know, they kind of didn't. If you don't mind us talking about that final sequence there from Malik Monk, it's about time. That's all I have to say about it. It is about time that the Kings finally got the right side of the whistle on that inbounds pass with 2.8 seconds left. Malik Monk gets the ball in the corner. The first thing he does is foul Kontavious Caldwell-Pope. He goes around, swim moves, hits him with the hook, completely boxes him out, and then KCP, to his credit, times it clearly not perfectly, but as close to perfectly as you can, comes around him, swats the ball from behind. Look, man, I am, in my opinion, he got all ball. I didn't see a whole lot of wrist. I didn't see a whole lot of arm being swatted. I think Kontavious might have gotten all ball, and the Kings might have gotten away with it. I'm not going to complain about it. Like I said, we can literally go down the list of things that the Kings have been on the wrong side of this season, especially towards the end of game. The Kings deserve that one. Like,
hey, man.
They absolutely were due.
To my and Jason Ross's favorite quote, market correction. I kept telling him all year long when the Yankees were winning a lot, a market correction was coming. I mean, turns out I was right because they've had a horrible second half. But it's been lopsided this year. The Kings have been getting killed on two-minute reports. They were bound to have a couple calls go their – I guess missed calls go their way. And, I mean, that just kind of starts that climb towards the middle. I mean, they've gotten got a couple times. And I think when you look at the two-minute report, which is going to come out today probably like at 2 o'clock, you're going to read that – Malik Monk committed an offensive foul on KCP. KCP did not foul Malik Monk on the shot attempt. And you're also going to see that Trey Lyles, who, in my opinion, the play of the game, was, first of all, Lyles probably shouldn't. I mean, I didn't love that shot selection, driving in the lane and going right at the rack, with, you know, 20 seconds left, 30 seconds left. But him crawling back in bounds and still being half out of bounds and tapping the ball with Sabonis.
Right. Great play, though.
Heads great up. Play. Great basketball play. Not right. Legal. He was out of bounds, but love to see it.
The best plays usually are illegal.
Yeah, the best plays are illegal. Who was it a couple years ago? I think it was KD. He was out of bounds in Golden State. Yeah, he was out of bounds saving a ball. And like, I don't know. There's many, many instances where that has happened. But last night, the Kings finally had the one where it was like, oh, he wasn't in bounds at all. But just a spoiler, keep your eyes peeled for the two-minute report because I'm sure you're going to see some – if you want to drink some Denver Nuggets fan tears, there's going to be some uproar from that corner of the internet. But I mean, I guess this is a good way to kind of transition to Sabonis. Sabonis has that.
Yeah, let's
dunk.
Talk about the beginning of the game.
Let me just start with, we were sitting there, and anyone that was around each other on Media Row, we were talking about what we thought. Is he going to play tonight? There were whispers that he wanted to play on Tuesday, but he had to wait for the swelling to go down, and he felt like he could play, but the training steps, let's wait. It seemed like Wednesday, in my mind, was always going to be not assured, but a really good chance he was going to play last night. How afraid, or not afraid, but I guess nervous were you seeing him come out for warmups with that tape on his hand? And did you think it was going to hinder his playing ability?
Yeah. I was like a 9.5 on my out of 10 fear scale, especially seeing the wrap job. Like, I mean, I am by no means anywhere near a medical professional.
Close. You're close.
I'm right there, buddy. But it's, it was alarming for me to see him come out with just like some pre-wrap and some bandage around his hand, especially when you hear the severity of his injury and, like, you know, pretty much saying his thumb is broken or whatever the ligament. What is it? The ligament that attaches his thumb?
It's the little bone.
Not that you're a doctor either, but.
Oh, I'm not. My grandpa's a doctor.
You're fine. You can give medical advice.
That's a whole skit on Kerber
Enthusiasm. Doctor adjacent.
If anybody's seen Curb Your Enthusiasm, this kid's like 19. He's like, oh, my dad's a dermatologist. I can diagnose you.
Oh,
I'd rather talk to your dad. No, it's like the little bone that the tendon connects to. So with that bone being broken, the tendon, it's not working properly.
Floppy.
It's not working. Yeah.
And it's really taped up, to his credit. You know, like, he cannot move that thing. It looked like his thumb was getting no circulation at all, and like it was completely cut off. So I can't speak to how much it hurt or not, but I was definitely nervous that not necessarily that you know, he would catch the ball and it would hurt, or you know, it would bang his thumb or something. Just with the physical nature of the way Sabonis plays, and him going against Jokic, who's such like an awkward, like, you know, he's always flailing around throwing it, and he's just a 280 plus pound man. I just thought, you know, there was a good chance his hand would get slapped, or he would be trying to get physical with Jokic and bend his finger back or something just weird, something Marvin Bagley-esque, where it's just like, cool, I didn't even see that happen, but apparently it did. And now he's out for another 2 weeks or 2 months. But I was definitely nervous, and I was very surprised to see him give it a go, especially after missing Tuesday. I just thought they were going to give him the break off and then kind of reevaluate later. But on the same token, I thought it was going to be the Kings kind of put themselves in a weird situation where if he didn't play last night and didn't play on Tuesday, we were just going to get into this cycle of every single game being like, okay, well, he's still questionable tonight. The past two nights, that's meant no play. Does that mean tonight he's going to play? Does that mean that Friday? Are we getting closer? It's just kind of like the weird nature of the fact that the Kings never officially, even in the Woj bomb, if you want to, the Woj tweet, it was, I mean, that was the biggest no information tweet I've ever seen in my life, where it's like, okay, Sabonis got tested. The results weren't inconclusive, but just they're still trying to figure out how the extent of the injury and if he will miss any, if any time.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
What are you even saying?
So we don't know if he's hurt, and we don't know how much time he's going to miss, if he is going to miss any.
I guess when you look at how he said it, and at the time it made complete like no sense to me. And I guess now it makes not sense, but I can understand, I guess, how he didn't know how to correctly phrase it or word it, as someone as at Woj, just someone as Woj, as big as Woj, couldn't find the words to like accurately depict what was going on. He tried, because I mean, still there's a lot of vagueness to what is going on. Like, there's just a lot of tiptoeing around it. I mean, even last night Sabonis told Jason Anderson of the B, he said, I don't really know what I'm allowed to say, but I just know I don't want to have surgery right now, because as I told you off the air just this morning, our friends at The Athletic, they revealed that Sabonis, it would take 4 to 6 weeks if he has surgery to recover, to get back on the floor. And that's why, to me, and I figured, you know, just based off things you're reading, again, not doctors, but things that we were reading about that process, it does take about a month plus to recover. And if the Kings were going to keep saying, okay, he's questionable tonight, okay, he's out, if they're going to keep kicking that can like down the road, why not just get him right? And try to stay, I don't know, tread water for a month. That seems like it's impossible. I mean, not impossible, but a very unlikely scenario. The Kings really need Domantas Sabonis to be truly effective. And as well as they played on Tuesday without him, and as bad as it looked for most of the game last night, I know that that beginning was an outlier, because the Kings have been a good team with Sabonis on the floor. But as far as how I felt, he looked good. I mean, he looked like he was comfortable. He did mention that he, post-game, he was not able to play defense like he normally does. He said he was using his chest a lot on Jokic, so his chest was sore because he had to use his body rather than use his right hand. So he's like, my chest hurts. But that's something he's going to have to get used to. I mean, he has his left hand, and he has part of his right hand, and he has the rest of his body. So, I mean, he's still really effective with basically half a hand and the rest of himself. So 12-18 from the field, hits both three-pointers. The shot is not affected. I mean, again, it's not his dominant hand. 10 boards, 5 assists, and 31 points. I mean, that's Domantas Sabonis. So I really don't think it's something that I'm really concerned about. I think it's going to come down to swelling. If he can keep the swelling down, if he can keep that under control, which, I mean, I know he will. The Kings do have a good training staff, and he gets his treatment for an hour after every game. I think he's going to keep playing. I think where the Kings are right now this season, how this is the most exciting they have been in almost 20 years. This is the best they've been in almost 20 years. And they're in a position to make the the playoffs, not the play-in. They're in position to make the playoffs with how the Western Conference is shaping up and how we're almost halfway through the season here. I think Domantas Sabonis missing any time would be pretty devastating to what the Kings are trying to build. I mean, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like you said, like they look good on Tuesday. They definitely surprised the hell out of me. I didn't expect them to come out and at any point in that game be up 20 points, regardless of how it ended up playing out. And yeah, it's funny the fact that Sabonis back, and then they were down 15-20 that entire game. But it was just so clear. I mean, it's no surprise to anybody that this team is so much better with Domantas Sabonis on the floor. I mean, he's just such an incredible talent. Like you just can't replace any level of production that he brings. Yes, in that Tuesday game, I think Jordy made a point to point out that the bigs that replaced Domas had a combined, I think it was 21 points, 20 rebounds or something like that. So it wasn't like, you know, stats wise, they really missed him, but just the impact on the floor, the fact that last night he plays 38 minutes against the best center in the NBA, maybe the best center in the world right now. It really goes tick for tack with him. I mean, Jokic, yeah, he had 40 points, but Domas with one, like you said, with 1.5 hands, put up 31-10 against him and really played great defense on him. I thought, to go back to his hand and just the amount that he's using it, watching the game back, especially on TV where you get the benefit of, you know, close up replays and stuff like that, I was shocked at the amount that he was using his right hand. I mean, you see, you mentioned how he said he was using a lot of his chest. I saw a couple of possessions, especially down the stretch of the game, which I'm sure at that point he's not thinking at all about further injuring his hand at all. But towards the end of that game, he's sticking that right hand into Jokic all the time, like just trying to strip the ball and everything. And it's just like, I mean, just the amount of toughness, because, you know, this injury is for the most part a pain tolerance thing. For him to be going out there is just like, it's really incredible to see. And I don't think people should take for granted how special what he's doing is, right, or what he did last night was, because for a lot of people, like you're sitting out. I mean, what I think Chris Paul had this same injury last year, and I think you were the one who told me that he missed like 2 months or something. Or Jason Ross told me that he missed 2 months with it. Like this is not something that you just casually play through, and it's no big deal. Like this guy is incredibly tough, and for him to not miss, like he didn't miss a beat last night, and he's playing with one hand. Just an absolute monster. And like we're so fortunate.
Most points scored really? A game.
This is a season high?
This year, season high. Yeah. With the first game back after the hand issue. Yeah,
that's incredible. That is incredible. I didn't know that.
Doing something special, man. Doing something special. Yeah. I mean, he's high fiving teammates with the right hand, I saw. I mean, not really hard, but he's
using his right hand.
I saw he's sick in the passing lane a couple times. Post game, I mean, just seeing it up close, like in the locker room, looked fine. Didn't look like it was all purple and beat up. Didn't look like it was gonna fall off. It looks like he's gonna keep playing. Brendan says because Chris Paul isn't Lithuanian. Lithuanian lasagna. We got King's Pulse in the chat.
Such a terrible nickname.
I like it.
While we're talking about you, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like what lasagna, Lithuania and lasagna, like lasagna is Italian. Like
that's why it's funny. It's like saying Greek. There is Greek pizza. I think, isn't there? There's like such a thing as Greek pizza.
I wish there was Greek pizza like that. I honestly don't know.
I don't know. I'm sure there is.
I was going to look it up, but it's not worth it. We'll just say it is.
I'm sure there's a concoction out there called Greek pizza. But what do you got in your brain?
I just wanted to, while we're talking about dominance as well, bring up De'Aaron Fox, who, you know, I mean, I think De'Aaron was getting a lot of, not hate, but just, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Let's just talk about De'Aaron's game.
Nah, sound off, Chris. off. You know, go off.
Me and Brendan were talking after last night's game, and you know, he was telling me how there's a lot of Kings fans in his mentions, and granted, this is Twitter, and we all know that you have to take social media hate with a grain of salt because it doesn't represent the entire fan base. But there was just a lot of people in Brendan's mentions who are still blaming things primarily on De'Aaron Fox, and especially early in tonight's game when you know he didn't he was, you know, he got off to a slow start, as did pretty much the entire team. Just we're not happy with De'Aaron Fox, and for him to really, you know, kind of get things together in that second half, finishes off with 17 points in that second half, finishes with, I think, 31 points. Is that correct? 31 points, 13 yes, assists in last night's game. I thought he was incredible on the offensive end. Defensively, we did mention how Bones Highland did give him an incredibly tough time. But I honestly attribute a lot of that to the fact that people don't realize this, but, you know, especially when you see him in person, Nikola Jokic is just like the biggest person, one of the biggest people you will ever see in your life. And De'Aaron Fox is not. De'Aaron Fox is a very slender guy. And it's, I saw Trey Lyles struggle to get, it's just like Jokic, you have to literally go around him. Like, you can't fight through him. There's no like sneaking by. You have to, it takes like 2 to 3 steps to get around the man. So I think that was a big reason why De'Aaron struggled and, you know, had a tough time keeping Bones out of the paint. But De'Aaron played great offensively last night, and he was really, I mean, we talk about, I think, was it on this podcast where we were talking about De'Aaron Fox is a possible clutch player of the year candidate. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was just incredible down the stretch of last night's game. In the fourth quarter alone, has 15 points. He was 6 of 7 from the field in the fourth quarter. Just was borderline unstoppable. I mean, hitting mid-range jump shots like their layups. What were your thoughts on De'Aaron Fox last night?
I mean, yeah. I mean, the criticisms that come with Fox, I mean, if fans expect him to just score, I mean, every time he has the ball in his hands, that's just not who he really is. I mean, he's more than that, which speaks to who he is. I mean, De'Aaron wasn't scoring a lot in the first half, but I think he had 6 or 7 assists. He had 7 assists at the break.
He did.
So he was distributing. He was finding his teammates. And when they needed him to score, and he had to be that guy in the fourth quarter, guess what? He was. 15 points, 6 of 7 shooting from the field, makes the only 3 that he takes. He hit big shot after big shot down the stretch. And they weren't like layups. They weren't in transition layups. They were jumpers. They were step back baseline jumpers, step in 15 footers with less than a minute to go. He was clutch, and De'Aaron Fox is clutch. We know him to be that guy. Yeah. And when he wants to step out and do more, and that's one of the biggest things I think people get on about the Halliburton trade is Fox can't distribute like he can. Okay. Well, on a night where he is, you want more from him offensively. Okay. Well, you got that too. Scored 15 in the fourth quarter. He scored 10 plus points in 3 straight games in the fourth quarter. So I don't know what more people want from him in as far as being realistic goes. But when you look at what Fox has done this homestand, 5 games, 28.5 points, 57% from the field, 4 rebounds, and 5.5 assists. And he's playing the best defense he's played this season. I mean, of his career this year. This is the best we've seen Fox play defense. I don't really know what else you want from him. I mean, what more can you get from De'Aaron Fox right now? I mean, do you want him to be like an elite 3-point shooter? I mean, he's 35% this year. That's not bad. I mean, I think he shot, what, 22% from 3 last year? I just don't know what more people want from him. And
yeah.
Please, what do you got?
No, I mean, I just completely agree. Like, I mean, it's just, I'm sorry, I was reading Brendan in the comments.
Oh, look at the skates.
The skates. I mean, we don't need to talk about the skates, but jeez. No, I mean, De'Aaron has been, in my opinion, like he's been incredible this year. I think what we saw from him last night is just like that's that Star Fox stuff where I me and Brendan also on the King's Pulse podcast last week went through our all-star bids. And I think De'Aaron is like just on the outside looking in and maybe could make it as an injury replacement. But like this dude has been a top what? I mean, I was going to say top 10, but that doesn't even really feel like a compliment. He's been a top 6 or 7 guard in the Western Conference this year. And that's a little bit, I mean, that might not sound like a lot, but really when you think about the depth of that position and the fact that, you know, De'Aaron is really sharing a lot of the spotlight with Domantas Sabonis. I think he's been incredible, especially considering that such a huge criticism of him with playing off of Tyrese Halliburton, or was the fact that he couldn't play off of Tyrese Halliburton. The fact that he's been able to figure out how to play more off ball, play off of Domantas Sabonis. And obviously I just think it's a better fit between the two, because he can use Domas in the pick and roll as well. But I just think that, like you said, I don't know what people are expecting from De'Aaron. Like, he's not going to make every single shot. He's not going to be a 3-point marksman. But the fact that he's able to do these things, like, you know, he's one of the best finishers at the rim in this league, point blank period. And, you know, the fact that he's starting to knock down a 3-point shot, we've seen him. He hit a corner three last night at an incredibly clutch time in the game. Like, we have not seen De'Aaron Fox play this well offensively, be this well-rounded in his career. And the fact that, you know, we're seeing him hit those clutch time buckets and have the confidence to hit that, a 23, 24 footer at the top of the key to really ice the game. But I think that put them up two with whatever under a minute left. Like, I mean, that's incredible stuff for a guy who's supposedly not a top guard in this league. Like, show me a top guard in this league and I'll show you what De'Aaron Fox has done at points. And yeah, absolutely, Sass is totally right. Like, consistency is a really big part of it, but consistently De'Aaron Fox has came up clutch for the Kings. Like, granted, he hasn't been, you know, 25 plus points every single night, but when the Kings really, really need somebody, De'Aaron Fox has always been there to answer the call. And it's really been that way since his rookie season. Like, I think, like, Frank, would you classify De'Aaron Fox as a clutch, as a bona fide clutch player?
Yeah. I mean, there are multiple instances of him having a big shot. I mean, I don't even need to the Philly game when he was a rookie, the Heat dunk, the Hornets game, Brooklyn, he had a buzzer beater and sent him to overtime a couple years ago. There's so many games where he has come up big for them, and some games even that blend in where he's had big shots, but the defense is broken down. So looking at the consistency part of it, yeah, I understand that. But when you look at this season as a whole, he has had 1-5-6 game stretch where he has played bad. And it was right before he went into that 2-game break because it was foot, and he got that rest. And since he came back, he's been back to a 25-26 point per game scorer and doing it efficiently. So aside from the fact that he played hurt for a week and a half, and I don't want to use that as an excuse. I know he won't either, because he wouldn't be out there if he didn't feel good enough to play. But he has been an all-star type player. And again, like you said, the West is very, very deep this year as far as the guards go. Luka's being lumped in as a guard, and he's been playing just out of his freaking mind lately.
No comment.
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be in there probably. I mean, he's someone who deserves to be there. So maybe Fox will not make that aspect of you know, that aspect of the success he's looking for of the season. Might not happen, but he fits the bill. He fits the bill with his to me, consistent clutch effort that he puts out every night. When the Kings need him, like you said, he gets it done. When he wasn't scoring early in the game, got those buckets late when they mattered more. And that just speaks to me how valuable he is to this Kings team and how good of a fit he is with Sabonis. I just think that he's somebody that deserves, I mean, again, I know it's kind of crazy to say, a little bit more credit. I mean, yeah. I don't know what more you want from him.
It's like the Isaiah Thomas thing when he was talking about the dream team. I fit the qualification.
Fit the criteria.
But I wasn't selected.
Yeah, he might not be selected this year. Why should Shea get him with his team under 500? I mean, Chris,
it's definitely a good question, but Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is also fourth in the NBA right now in points per game. So, Siri's on it. Siri's trying to figure it out too, Tyler.
I said Shea, not Siri.
Shea is averaging 31 points per game. He's shooting 50% from the field, over a steal and a half per game, a block per game. Shea has been absolutely incredible, and the only reason Oklahoma City is even half decent, which they don't want to be, is because of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander has put the team on his back. And you know, it's also like, yeah, it's an all-star game, and like, if you're going to put Sabonis in for the Kings, it's kind of like you can either have the Kings get a second player, which they definitely might deserve. But I just feel like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is having a step above a season than De'Aaron Fox. And it just so happens he's on a really garbage team. People were making the same arguments for why is DeMarcus Cousins making the All-Star game. It's really pretty much the same exact kind of thing where it's like, yeah, this dude is just so incredible that it's not his fault that he's on a really crappy
exactly
team. Even considering that OKC's only 4 games under 500. I'm not going to say that they're going to get any closer to 500 than that, but the fact that they have a better record than the Los Angeles Lakers right now, we know that's not saying too much, but a lot of that or a majority of that is because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you can't keep him out. I mean, that makes us hypocrites if we say, you know, DeMarcus Cousins deserved to be an All-Star those couple years and Shai doesn't. But I will say this, if De'Aaron Fox, there's an avenue. I mean, injuries happen, players sit out. Players have opted to sit out more over the past couple of years, but De'Aaron would be a very exciting player in the All-Star game. Just his pace, his athleticism. He's really been kind of digging into that athletic bag this year. Like, he's been dunking more.
Bro, he tried to throw down on homeboy last night. Oh my God. That was out of nowhere.
Almost killed somebody last night. So stop justifying it. We heard the same thing when Conley got chosen for Fox a few years ago and he didn't deserve it because his team was winning. Thoughts on that, Chris?
I heard the same thing when Conley got chosen over Fox a few years ago when he didn't deserve it because his team was winning. I mean, first off, De'Aaron Fox never should have made an All-Star game before this season. I don't think he ever deserved an All-Star nod before this season. Mike Conley also, I mean,
He never made it.
He made it as an injury replacement once, which I was going to say, it does kind of feel like, unfortunately, De'Aaron's might end up falling under the same category, which is kind of ironic because that was Mike Conley was De'Aaron's pro comp all throughout his draft process. So it would be a little ironic if De'Aaron kind of ends up in that same category of like never making the All-Star game, but always being like, he's an All-Star caliber point guard. So I could definitely see that being the case. And maybe he makes it off of injury replacement. I hear you. If you're going to be on a winning team also, like, that matters. It just does. Like, it's the sacrifice. Like, Mike Conley maybe was averaging 14 points a game that season. I don't even know what
that
it
was.
It might have been 16, but like it's flowers, the fact though that you're sacrificing.
It's to flowers. Be
on a better team.
The NBA was giving Mike Conley his flowers. That is the only time he's made an All-Star game. It was that year. It was 2020, 2021. They were giving him his flowers, and yeah, I think you're right. Fox did play pretty well 2 years ago. I think he averaged 25 a game and deserved to be an All-Star. Yep. But the Kings, it was kind of like the Cousins aspect of it, where the Kings were not good and Cousins was great a couple of those years before he was an All-Star. So, yeah, I think that De'Aaron Fox could squeak in as an injury replacement, but I think right now there just are too many guards. But, I mean, the All-Star talk is fun, and I enjoy the All-Star talk, but, I mean, I don't think De'Aaron Fox gives a damn about making the All-Star team. I think he'd rather have the Kings be winning basketball games, and that is something he said before. He wants to win a game in February to get some recognition. That's great, but the Kings being where they are right now in the standings, the Kings continue to compete at a high level. That's more important. I think it should be more important to the fans and be more important to the players as well, because, yeah, being in Salt Lake City would be great for De'Aaron Fox. He deserves that recognition. He has earned it. But if it becomes a case of one King should make it, it's going to be Sabonis. If it's going to be one or the other, it's going to be Sabonis. I think that's something that is pretty widely known. I mean, even guys that were from national media last night were saying that if it's one, it's going to be Sabonis. So it's not something that I'm really too worried about.
I mean, and it's also just like a numbers game. Like, it's just the fact that there's so many more elite guards in this league. Like, you look at, I mean, Ja Morant's going to make the All-Star game based off of fan votes and the fact that his team is really good. Devin Booker is going to make the All-Star game, even though he's going to miss a month here. I'd still assume he's going to make the team. Luka Doncic is 10,000% going to make the All-Star team. Steph Curry, you know, when he was playing, was absolutely deserving of an All-Star. He's going to miss a month or so here, so he might not make it, but I would say he's statistically and, you know, value-wise, probably more important to the Warriors' success than Fox is to the Kings at the moment. Like, it's just, and then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who we've been having this conversation about. It's just going to be such a tougher road for him, where Sabonis really only has to worry about Jokic, DeAndre Ayton. Let me look here. Is there really anybody else that could be? Maybe Jaren Jackson Jr. And that's really kind of it when you're looking at like the center position. But, you know, I think they've also consolidated it to not even include centers. I think it's just two front guards court and three forwards, right?
Three front court. Yeah, hey, it's possible. Am I going to sit here and say that it's impossible that Fox and Sabonis can both make it? Absolutely not. I think there is a possibility that happens. Like you said, there are some injuries. Maybe Damian Lillard chooses to sit out the All-Star game because he's someone that likes to keep his body right, especially with everything he's gone through. There's an avenue. So people that are really freaking out about Fox has to make the All-Star team, like, it, geez. And he really does not care as much as you think he does. I really promise you he does not. He would love it. He is not going to cry.
Like, yeah, I mean, All-Star games aren't
like Rudy Gobert. Like he's not going to cry like Gobert did.
It's really crazy that, I mean, yeah, like All-Star games, it's whatever. It's just like, it's not as important as making all NBA third team or something like that. You know, like All-Star is kind of, it's just a way to get paid more, I think, for advertising stake. And like, you can say like, oh, I'm a two-time All-Star. Like, I would much rather be a two-time third team all NBA than All-Star.
Yeah, focus on that. Whatever. Focus on, that should be the goal. Right. That should be the goal, being all NBA and All-Star. That's gravy. And if it happens, it happens. But if not, I'm more worried about the Kings winning basketball games.
So, absolutely. Frank, this would not be a current Sacramento Kings podcast if we did not continue to talk about the Kings' backup center position. We have come full circle. We have Rashawn Holmes back in the rotation at backup center. Last night, 0 points, one rebound. He did have two blocks. He had a steal. I didn't think it was really anything to write home about. I don't think Rashawn cemented his position at the backup center. On Tuesday night, he had a much better game. He played, I believe, 20 minutes without Domantas Sabonis in the game. He had 8.7 rebounds in that one. How do you feel about Rashawn's little return to the rotation here? Do you feel like, I'm not asking you to predict, but do you feel like he deserves to maintain that backup center position for the time being?
I mean, to me, it's who's the best backup. I mean, he's the best backup big that they have. I think that until they make a move and until they really have to figure things out on that end, he should continue to get those minutes. I mean, it's not that many minutes when you think about it. Domantas Sabonis has been playing a lot of minutes this season. And
played 38 last night.
While Mike Brown has said he does not want that to continue, I just think that Rashawn Holmes has proven he can be a Band-Aid while you have Sabonis rest. And I'd love to see Nemias Keita come out and be the player that we want him to be. He so far has proven that he struggles with, defending at the NBA level has been tough. Controlling the basketball has been tough. Staying out of foul trouble has been a problem for a lot of the Kings bigs off the bench this year. But Rashawn is somebody I think that has earned that right. And it's kind of crazy how it's come full circle. We're back where we were on opening night. It's Sabonis to Holmes through Metu, through Keita, through Lyles for a minute. Am I forgetting anybody? Len hasn't really had an opportunity to be backup center.
One chance, yeah.
It's mostly been Chemezi playing backup center and Rashawn and Keita. So it's going to take a trade. Like, really, for this team to be where they need to be, they need to get a defensive big. They need to probably acquire one by February if they really want to make some noise. But not make noise. They're going to be in the conversation for the playoffs, as we know. But to succeed, they need more defense. The paint was a crime scene yesterday. It was, I don't know how it ended, but it started horrifically. It was very, very bad. The Kings have struggled all year to defend the paint. I think they're one of the bottom five teams in the league in point points in the paint defense. But I mean, when you look at what you need from a backup center, Rashawn Holmes, we've seen what he can do in a starting role. Can he be that guy off the bench? I don't think so. I don't think you need him to be that, though. But hopefully he can kind of dig back into those days of Phoenix and provide the Kings with 10, 11 minutes per game off the bench. But Do you think this is something that the Kings are going to roll with until the deadline, or do you think they're going to try to make a trade sooner than later?
Yeah, it kind of feels like they're going to make a trade sooner than later. I think the fact that they've gone full circle here now and you know, Rashawn, unless, you know, I think they're going to give Rashawn a couple more games here. I think it's in the benefit of both of them because, like you mentioned, if Rashawn can find his old form, obviously that's great for the Kings. It's also good for Rashawn Holmes' trade value because it shows, like, hey, this guy is not damaged goods.
Good point.
A fluky start to the season or whatever you want to say, but we just don't have a role for this guy. He absolutely still has the talent. He still has the desire. He still has some game left in him. Desire him, please. I think it's in the benefit of both of them. And if they kind of send him back to the bench, it's just tough to sell like $11 million or whatever, $33 million dude over the next 3 years. Just take him to be, you know, he can't start for us, but hopefully take the chance and you can spend, you know, 33 mil to try and figure it out on your own. I think it's definitely beneficial for the Kings to try and figure out the Rashawn Holmes situation. And with the way that Nemias Keita came in and looks still incredibly raw, not quite the player that they need right now. I mean, I think the ideal version or the full-fledged version of Nemias Keita maybe is a guy that the Kings could definitely use at backup center right now, but just with how raw he is, I don't think Nemias is the answer. Metu we saw get about 15 to 20 games here. We saw some good, we saw some stuff from Metu, and I think at the end of the day it's just like he's just not the answer. You know, he doesn't rebound enough. He doesn't set good enough screens. He's not really a rim protector at all. And I think those are the three main things that the Kings are looking for in that backup big is just somebody that you don't have to be the incredible playmaker that Domas is, but can you still create space for others and can we run similar concepts while you're in? Whereas like Rashawn Holmes, he comes in and really all it is pick and roll with him. And we've seen now throughout this season, if he's not getting the ball as that role man, he really struggles to like find his game and kind of stay active throughout the game. So I think this is just a long way of saying that I think until further notice, until the Kings find a better answer, I think Rashawn is the most talented option that they have. I think, you know, Rashawn is for sure one of the 10 best players on this team and probably deserves to get playing time. It's just for whatever reason, he just has not looked good offensively or defensively. And Brendan brings up a great, I'm sorry, King's Pulse brings up a great point here. Maybe he has too many thumbs. Maybe we've seen Domantas Sabonis have this nice little boost from losing half of a thumb or full thumb.
People aren't talking about that enough. People aren't talking. No. I mean, sorry to out Brendan. King's Pulse revealed. Who could it be?
Right, sorry.
No, I think that you crater his value even more if you bury Rashawn on the bench. I've never really understood that point. I know that Mike Brown wants to try different things, but it's like the Thanos quote, like, where did that bring you back to me? It's like, yeah, it brought you back to Rashawn Holmes. going through everything and failure brought you back to me. And Rashawn is back as the backup center. And if he can run into a couple of good games here over the next month, I mean, yeah, that could bump up the trade value a little bit. I mean, it's still probably going to take the Kings attaching an asset to get rid of him. Not get rid of him, but get him, well, I guess get rid of him.
You have to get bring value back trade. For him.
Get value back for him is the respectful way to say that.
Yeah.
and I know that people want the PJ Washingtons and the Plumleys. I mean, the Plum Dogs.
There's if we could flip Rashawn and something else for PJ Washington and Plum Dog Millionaire, it would be Monty for Masterclass.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, either of those guys to me as a backup center would be great. And PJ has the ability to even start in a pinch. I mean, he's been someone that's been a good scorer for Charlotte and someone that could help because he's young. So what will it take for the Kings to move Rashawn? I don't know. I mean, I think I saw a couple of trade ideas out there that were saying the Kings might have to attach someone like TD or some another player. I know that some teams might want Davion if it was going to be in a bigger deal. That would be tough to see the Kings part with him. He's been such a huge defensive, just a huge part of the team's defensive success over the past couple of games, especially late. But it might take something tough. It might take you have to give up a lot to get a lot sometimes. And if the Kings want to really make an upgrade, it might sting a little bit. We've seen that happen before, obviously, in a big way with the trade that took place last February. So for right now, this is what it is, though. I mean, the Kings have they have slim pickings. They have Holmes, they have Metu, they have Len, they have Kata. Those are the only guys that can play backup center. I didn't really enjoy the Trey Lyles experience at backup center. I know he had a couple of good possessions on Jokic, but that's not really a winning formula, throwing Trey Lyles at backup center.
I have a semi-rhetorical question about the P.J. Washington thing, and it is kind of P.J. Washington specific. I just think Kings fans have just ran away with this P.J. Washington love. And my question is, if P.J. Washington is so great, and I do think P.J. Washington is a very interesting young piece that you can mold into something, absolutely. I mean, you can't teach his size and shooting ability, but he's 24 years old. We've seen him put up a lot of points for Charlotte at points. Charlotte has 9 wins this year. Why is Charlotte, it's kind of like the John Collins thing. Why is Charlotte so quick to want to move PJ Washington, a 24-year-old stretch four, when they have 9 wins? Like, wouldn't you think that that would be the exact kind of project and piece that you would want to retain, or just say like he's untouchable or have a huge amount of value towards if he was really something that should be desired? And like, yeah, I said, semi-rhetorical. I'm more just trying to plant a further question in people's heads, but
might be posturing on their part a little bit. Might be also trying to put up a facade to see what kind of offers they get for him. He is a restricted free agent after the season. Like you said, 24, he just turned 24 in August. So I don't think it makes much sense either to move on from somebody who has been one of your best younger players. But, when the formula is not working, you got to kind of go back and start from scratch.
Yes.
And they might need to kind of tear things down and build back up. I mean, this team is not good. They're very bad, even with their players fully healthy. And yeah, they beat the Kings, and that was one of the Kings' worst losses of the season. The Hornets do have some guys that are good players, but they obviously aren't going to be a team that's in the deep playoff discussion. So PJ is someone who probably will bring you back a best return. And that's why I'm saying the return from the Kings, I think, Rashawn and like a future first or a second or something. It's going to take something a little more than that to get someone like PJ Washington. And it might be a little painful. And like I said, I would not really feel comfortable attaching Davion in a deal like that, but that's something I could see the Hornets actually asking for. They are not, they would not give up a young player with control for an overpaid center at this point.
Right.
I just don't know if that's going to happen. Right. It doesn't make sense. The name is great. I know the Kings think they were linked to him briefly last year. That's why I think people go back to him a lot. But there's also the scenario where the Hornets really just stand pat and they say, no, thanks. We'll take our chance with the 24-year-old. So
we're getting Victor anyway.
They're getting Victor anyway. So I think it's not going to be one of the guys that the Kings have been linked to. It'll be one of those dark horse players that we haven't heard from very much. And some players might not even be mentioned yet. I mean, again, the West is so close right now, and even the East race, I mean, there are so many things that need to be determined over the next month or so, and the teams that are truly going to be tearing it down have not made that decision yet. I mean, so we're going to see some names float around that aren't floating around today, but the Kings need to, number one, survive this time with Sabonis treating that thumb, and survive the minutes that he's not on the floor, because Sabonis with one hand right now is still a damn good player. So Rashawn Holmes and whoever else steps into that role need to do a lot more than what they're currently doing. And what Rashawn did on Tuesday was, that's to me an ideal output that you'd want from him. What he did on Tuesday is, if you could do that, you know, 9 times out of 10, let's not aim that high. Let's go 5 times 7. Out of 10, 6 times out of 10. If you could do that more times than not, the Kings are going to be in a good place when Sabonis is resting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I it's a question too now of like, with Sabonis's injury, when do they do it? Because we've seen Monty take his sweet time when it comes to deals. His first offseason or first regular season here, first trade deadline, we saw him push it all the way to the brink. And I don't think he made he did make a couple like fringe moves his first trade deadline. And then last season, we saw him just wait almost until like the last moment And then we saw the Halliburton trade. We saw the Trey Lyles deal, Marvin Bagley getting shipped off and all that. So it came in bunches. And it's just, I think to your point that you made right there, it's like there's so many teams that are in this middle ground of like the Kings are only three games back from the 11th seed right now. And that's the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are without Karl Anthony Towns. And so there's a real good chance that at some point here, a lot of people, it's just going to naturally happen where they're going to figure out, okay, which side of the scale are we going to go for? Are we going to try and go into that play and push, or do we just completely tank it? And that's not going to happen for maybe another month or so here. And as we're on December 29th, that puts us right in February, which is right before the trade deadline. So I think it's just going to be a matter of these teams still, you know, you'll have your, that's maybe where the Charlotte Hornets deal would make more sense to happen immediately, because Charlotte is pretty firmly in that tanking category. But I don't foresee any deal happening anytime soon, even with Domas's injury, just because of the fact that they're not, you know, not a lot of teams are trying to tank at the moment. And it's going to be a good amount of time for these teams to figure out, okay, like we're fine shipping off, let me pick some random player. This is not going to happen, but Onyeka Okongwu or something like that, you know, Clint Capella. The Pacers aren't going to ship off Miles Turner and or Buddy Hield until they figure out if they're going to make the playoffs or not. Like, there's going to be a lot of people right now who are going to take this month of January to try and figure out, all right, what setting up for the trade deadline, what will happen? Will they be buyers or sellers?
Yeah, I mean, a lot needs to be determined, and the West is very, very tight. Like I said, sorry, I had to compose myself for that comment in the That's the first time we've gotten one of those. That's the first time we've gotten one.
We've made it, Frank. We have officially made it.
We got the creepy.
We have the chat bots.
We have the chat bots. We got bots, man. Before we get into the end of the podcast, I just want to highlight how incredible it's been being at Golden One Center over the past week, because I personally, I mean, again, I've worked there since 2017 in some way. I work for them and I cover them. Chris, you've been there to countless games. I have never experienced it this way. And I've really been to every home game since 2017. I have never, ever seen it this way right now. It's they're establishing a new record every night, a new attendance record every night. Standing room only last night. I think they let 300 people in standing room last night. It's just my ears have like that weird feeling when like last night when I think it was when Davion forced that steal and Malik Monk had the lay-in, it was deafening. Incredible things we're seeing at Golden One Center. And I'm excited for tomorrow night, Friday night, still holiday season. I think it's going to be another one of those record setting nights. And just want to say shout out to Kings fans for showing up in numbers, man. It's been so much fun just hearing that place and how it's just kind of reminiscent to how it was back at Arco. It's starting to kind of get into that category, that territory.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I had last night in my notes during the first quarter. It's funny that you mentioned how loud it was last night, because in the first quarter I have in my notes when it was 22-9, my note is crowd is actually completely silent. And like, it was so strange because it was completely full. It was a full arena, but to hear the arena at complete 100% just dead energy, and then for it to get, rightfully so, by the way, not saying Kings fans were bad, but they were playing like absolute garbage to start that game. But for them in that same exact game to get to the point that you're talking about right now, where it's deafening, the entire place is rocking. You know, players all throughout this season have mentioned countless times how, oh man, that felt like a playoff atmosphere for a second there. De'Aaron Fox last night in his post-game press conference makes an incredible statement saying that this should be one of the best home court advantages in sports, period, not just in basketball. I mean, he's not wrong. I mean, just the fact that, you know, this team shows up every single night. I mean, after not knowing today if Domantas Sabonis was going to play, after the way that they played yesterday, for them to set an attendance record the following day, just really speaks to how Kings fans are going to show up regardless. They're going to be loud if you give them something to cheer about. And I mean, they're just so passionate. Like, it really is different. Like, when you have a team that is used to success and fans that are used to success, it does numb you a little bit. Like, you are only looking for highlight plays and only looking for them to get good and do well. But the Kings fans, man, they'll show up win or lose. We've seen them lose more times than win here. If you just give us a good performance, if Davion Mitchell locks somebody up for two possessions in a row, I mean, that place will get rocking. I mean, how many times this season have we seen damn cookies, man? Cookies giving this team momentum. The fact that if a opposing player misses two free throws, for that to legitimately, and like, it's real. If you're in the building, like, again, it'll go from complete silence. The Kings down 15, 20 points, and the fans will be cheering for those free cookies like it's the finals and these are game tying free throws or something like that. And it's a real momentum boost if they miss the two free throws. And
it happened last night.
A couple times we've seen them get real on-court momentum from something so small like that.
From crumble cookies. It's crumble cookies. And you even see how pumped up it gets the other players. DeAndre Jordan last night, he missed the first free throw. Place is going nuts.
Nuts.
He makes second free throw. He starts barking at the crowd. It's like the Nuggets are up by 17 points in the third quarter, and DeAndre Jordan's barking at the crowd to shut the hell up about the cookies. But yeah, I mean, the crowd, like you said, it was a library. It was 100-81 Nuggets lead, 3:26 to go in the third quarter. Kings outscored Denver 46-26 the remainder of the game. But that run at the end of the third, the crowd just got completely into it. And they were still trailing by 11 going to the fourth quarter. Kings are down by double digits going to the fourth, but you would think the Kings are up by 20 the way that crowd gets going. And credit to, you know, the Kings entertainment crew and Scott Fresh that get the crowd going at the beginning of every fourth. And the Kings really needed it last night. But shout out to Crumble Cookies for giving these Kings. And a not shout out to there. Did you hear those fans in front of us that were chanting light the beam when the Kings were down by six with like six minutes left?
Yeah.
But maybe shout out to them though, cause they knew. Maybe they knew. I don't know. No. They knew.
You don't need I'm not a superstitious person, but like, let's not do that.
That was bad.
Like, I'm okay with saying light the beam. Like they did in that Clipper game, that Clipper blowout where it's like, okay, like, sure, we're blowing them out. It's kind of like a big taunt and like an FU to the fans. Like, oh, yeah, we can chant light the beam with 6 minutes left and feel confident. But, like, let's reserve light the beam chants for, like, the clock is literally ticking down and they're dribbling the ball at half court.
Like, dude, Keegan calls it out every time. Keegan is hilarious.
Does he really?
Well, the one time he was like, when he talks the courtside one with Moak, PA announcer Scott Moak, he always tells him, well, like, you guys started doing it at the 3 minute mark. That was kind of a lot. It's like, okay. Well, then the next game, it did it with like 6 minutes left. I think it was against like Indiana. He's like, well, this time it was 6 minutes. It's just, I don't know. It's hilarious to see. Don't do it when they're down by six, when the Kings are trailing with like five minutes left. If Kings are up by 20 with 2 minutes left, by all means, let it fly.
Yeah.
Let it fly. But if it's a close game, don't do it.
Don't.
Also, the MVP chance, too. I feel like the Kings have missed free throws every time there's an MVP champ.
Let's just not bring up free throws.
Let's not bring up free throws. Yeah, well, okay.
I watched the, like I said, I watched the game back once I got home last night. Very funny moment where after Malik hits the second one after missing the first, they're walking back to the huddle, and I see Herter just dying laughing as they walk back to the huddle, and I know he said something like, bro, like, we just, like, something, something's in the air or something like that, bro. Because if you're missing free, Malik Monk, who's shooting 91% from the free throw line this season, he was 5 of 5 leading into that trip. And then for him to split those, I mean, it could have been so sad if he missed them both. It would have been just the antithesis.
Before that missed free throw, he was 6th in the NBA in free throw percentage. He's 8th now. But when he missed that, I just thought, you got to be kidding me. Like, there's no way. There's no way. But it was a fun one. It was a fun one.
It was. It was
that
definitely
made it fun.
I said in the post-game recap show, That was the funnest win of the season. And honestly, one of the funner wins I think I've watched at Golden 1 Center.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I think I'll put that one top five, maybe top three. And I really can't think of many other ones.
The rewatch quality on that, like, final 5-6 minutes, three minutes, I guess, really, is off the charts. I'll rewatch that years from now. It was so much fun to watch that ending. And as ugly as the game was for the first 2-3 quarters, the Kings holding Denver to 39% from the field in the fourth is just huge to me. Hope they can carry that over. They face the Jazz on Friday. That's a tough way to end the homestand. They've been playing pretty decent basketball this season. They kind of hit a rough stretch there. I have to pull up exactly how they are playing right now. But, I mean, they have some guys that have been...
They've cooled off a little bit, but not much.
Right now, they're the Utah Jazz.
Yeah,
they're 19-18. They've lost two in a row, but they have a positive point differential. They are not a good road team. They are a very good home team. They are 7-13 on the road. They're 12-5 at home. So, I guess my last question to you is if the Kings can secure this win on Friday and the homestand 3-3, are you feeling optimistic? Are you happy with that result, or do you think they should have maybe finished it with a winning record? Like, are you kind of?
I mean, for sure. Yeah, they should have. They should have finished with a winning record. I mean, when you look back at last week, the fact, you know, we don't need to talk about it, but the losses to the Hornets and the Wizards, though the Wizards the Wizards are on a nice little roll. Still nothing to write home about, but they've now beaten the Kings, the Sixers, and the Suns in consecutive games here. They should have gone 3-0 that week. I mean, those are two very winnable games, maybe 2-1. Maybe you say the Wizards do have a lot of talent, and they should have, you know, they deserve to lose that one. Or I think they did deserve to lose the Charlotte game. But, you know, whatever. That's going to happen. They should have gone 4-2 in this nice little homestand, but I'll take 3-3. If they finish 2-4, that's a real disappointment. The fact that they were able to split the Nuggets is a success. I think any way you look at it, if you're going against the top team in the Western Conference, and Domantas Sabonis is going to miss one of those games, for you to split it, that's taking care of business, in my opinion. And Utah is going to be another tough task. The Kings can't overlook them. The Kings cannot overlook Utah, because Utah is a real challenge and probably the second biggest surprise team in the NBA this year. They have two incredible shooting bigs in Lauri Markkanen and Kelly Olynyk, who will give the Kings fits, I'm sure. But you know, it was a solid homestand. The win against the Lakers was a great win, just in terms of how they were able to do it. It was really fun to watch them just dominate the Lakers, honestly. And then, yeah, the game last night, those were two really, really fun wins. But for sure, the road trip had some disappointments, some ups and downs. But, you know, we're starting to get kind of into the meat of the season, the middle of the season, and you're going to have these lapses where, you know, you kind of just drop some games that you shouldn't drop and maybe win some games you shouldn't win. But the key to me is coming up in a couple weeks here. The Kings finally, after they go on the road trip, not really a road trip, but after they're finished with these next couple games here, they do have 7 straight games against very winnable opponents. So that's really what I'm looking for is can they really, you know, keep their heads above 500 for right now and then go into that stretch after the Hawks game where they play the Lakers, the Magic, back-to-back against Houston, at San Antonio, at Los Angeles against the Lakers, and then play OKC. Like, that's 7 straight games where you should realistically be going 5-2, 6-1, possibly 7-0 during that stretch. So that's what I'm looking for finally at this moment.
They have a lot of home games coming up, too. There's another 5-game homestand after that 2-game road trip to open up the new year. Another 5-game homestand. They go on the road for 2 more, then another 4-game homestand before finally going on a 7-game road trip. So a lot of home games coming up. This is like the bulk of their home schedule. I mean, when they come back from that road trip, and I think it comes around near the All-Star break, I think they only have like, 9-10 home games left. So they have a lot of home games coming up. But, yeah, Chris, this is the time for them to take care of business. And if Sabonis is going to be playing – this team has – there's no excuse. If everyone is healthy, knock on wood, healthy as they can be on Sabonis' part, and you're playing teams like the Lakers, who are in shambles, the Magic, the Rockets twice, the Spurs, Lakers again, OKC, you have to win a majority of those games. Have to. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if you can't then when will you? I mean, you can't bank on winning these games late in the year when you're playing. You play Portland again. You have to play Phoenix a couple of times. Milwaukee again. Brooklyn is on fire right now. They play them again in March. You need to take care of business now to give you a little bit of cushion, especially if there's a spurt of time where they're saying, hey, the Kings are going to shut down Sabonis for a week or two. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that's out of the question at some point. They want to give him a rest to kind of maybe handle the swelling and really get things to a point where he can play at a high level. We haven't seen how he's responded to last night yet. There's no practice today, no shoot around, anything like that. We don't know how he's feeling right now. We don't know if he's woke up with a club for a hand. We don't know if he woke up feeling healthy. So tomorrow's morning shoot around will tell us a lot on how he's feeling. If he's out there with a smile on his face and the hand taped up and shooting like usual, I think the Kings are in a really good spot. And if anything else, we'll see. But the time is now. The time is now to make a push.
Absolutely. Is that it? Do you want to do awards or
let's wrap this thing up? Do some quick awards. Awards are pretty quick. I think it's my turn this time. I think it's my turn.
It is.
My turn. My turn. All
it's
right.
My turn. My turn.
My turn. It's my turn. That's Skip, right?
Skip. Yes. Skip. Shout out Pele, by the way. Pele has passed away at age 82.
I just saw that, and that actually made me very upset. Shout out Pele. Rest in peace to Pele. Domantas Sabonis. I have to give him some love here. My king of the week. King of the week. Over the four games in the homestand. He did not play against Denver, as we all know, on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Sabonis during the homestand is ridiculous. 23 points per game, 17.3 rebounds, 8.5 assists, 56% from the field, 62% from three. Even with one hand, the man scores 31 points last night. He rebounded 10 rebounds. The assists are still there. He's had 11 straight double-doubles, leads the NBA in double-doubles. I don't know what else you expect from the man. He is the king of the week. He is
inevitable.
Inevitable. A lot of Thanos references.
A lot of Thanos.
Great villain. Great villain. My girlfriend thinks that she understands what he was trying to do, and she agrees with him. And that's an argument we have a lot.
Well, that's a big Bill Burr topic as well. Bill Burr, in like all of his comedy specials, always talks about how we have a population issue.
And I said, I always tell her, what if I died? What if I was snapped? And she goes,
hey, man.
Oh, whatever.
Natural selection, boy.
Thanos selection.
Yeah. I'm going to give my king of the week. This is going to be a spiritual one, and it's more, I mean, the obvious one is Domantas Sabonis for all the reasons you laid out. I mean, playing with one hand, even though Marvin Bagley's been doing that his whole career, is still yet very impressive. I'm going to give my king of the week, you know what, like I said, we'll make it spiritual. I'm going to make it Jordy Fernandez. Shout out Jordy, who comes into not an impossible situation, but a very difficult situation to manage, where Tuesday it comes. I believe they all learned that day on Tuesday. Thank you for understanding that little dig I threw at Marvin Brennan. Learned on Tuesday that he was going to be the head coach with Mike Brown testing positive for COVID. You know, I can't imagine how hectic that day must have been just in terms of game prep. I'm sure they tried to keep it as normal as possible. Jordy still worked out. I believe Trey Lyles is his workout partner, or the guy that he warms up in pregame. So, you know, for him to go through all of that and then still coach the game, the Kings had a 20-point lead at one point. Let's not talk about the fact that they blew that lead. You know, I just overcoming all of that. And then the next night, having his team ready, having them not feel down about blowing that 20-point lead. And as a matter of fact, doing the complete opposite, keeping his team engaged while down by 19 in the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken, they were down by 19, to still have the team believing in him, instilling that belief, and for them to complete that 19-point comeback against his former team, you know, the team that he sat on the bench for last year under Mike Malone. I'm sure it felt incredible for Jordy. Jordy is just like – Jordy's an all-timer. We got to, you know, get to know his personality a little bit in Vegas during Summer League. And I think that dude is I don't know if he's actually going to be a head coach at some point in this league, but absolutely deserves to have a shot because he 100% knows basketball. And I think his players absolutely love him. Like Jordy just seems like a Hall of Fame guy. There's a lot of Hall of Fame guys, people on this Kings team, not necessarily Hall of Fame, you know, Naismith Hall of Famers, but just Hall of Fame humans. And Jordy is absolutely one of them. So I'm going to give mine to Jordy Fernandez. Also shout out the Kings, who I think I saw on the broadcast last night. This is their fifth 15 plus point comeback on the season.
Okay.
Good stuff.
I did not expect it to be that many, but shout out Jordy. Shout out Mike Brown. Get well soon.
Right.
It sounds like he's not feeling many symptoms and he should be back sooner than later. So that's good news.
Yeah. I saw a meme last night. It had me dead. It was like Mike Brown watching this game at home. And it's like a dude like leaping through his teeth. Just like that visual sparked like a whole stream of consciousness where I was just like, yeah, like what is Mike Brown? What's the experience of Mike Brown watching this game on TV? Like he's got to be just like,
screaming,
like hollering at his television. I cannot, just a lot of claps, like, you know, I mean, you know, as someone, just, you know, the difference of you and I of watching the game at the arena versus watching the game at home, I'm sure, like, you're a lot more animated, a lot more emotional, angry, happy, excited when you're watching at home, just because you're able to, you know, kind of freely get all those emotions out without any criticism. But
yeah, we bottle up a lot. We bottle up a lot on Media Row. We give each other a lot of looks. We give each other a lot of like the
like, you see that? Ooh,
a lot of looks.
Yeah,
a lot of looks.
That gave me a lot of joy. Is just thinking if you're ever down or feeling sad about something, just think about Mike Brown watching that Kings comeback and just how crazy he must have been.
He probably has like
definitely puts a smile on my face.
He probably has like a pool house or something that he goes out and just puts together. He probably isn't allowed to watch it in the house.
Right.
I'm sure his family's like, you need to get out of here.
You have to leave. You need to leave.
You're scaring the dogs and scaring everybody. That's probably, he probably watches by himself and some peace and quiet of his own quarters.
For sure. If we want to do Coke Machine, I feel like it's wrong to do Coke Machine. I don't know why it feels so wrong to do Coke Machine nowadays. Like it used to be like, oh, I definitely have a Coke Machine. I don't know about King of the Week, but now they didn't even play well this
week,
all things considered.
I think it's always fun to give it to something. Sometimes it's like, I don't know. Let me think.
Who deserves? Oh, I got this. Beautiful.
Okay, you got it. You take it.
I got it.
Take
I got this. Hold on. I got to set this up perfectly. Where is it? Yeah, here we go. Here we go.
Oh.
I'm giving it to our guy. Our guy. This is the last time I'm going to mention it because I do feel bad. I feel like I have been giving Matt way. I feel like Matt has gotten overboard in terms of criticism for this because – In Matt's defense, he did nothing any different than what I would do. I don't know if you would do it, Frank, but like it was just like it was definitely not an insult, but like it was a critique on De'Aaron Fox's play. Matt George saying that LaMelo Ball had De'Aaron Fox on skates. It was a little aggressive. It was definitely a take, but not something that you would expect for a player to see, respond to, and then continue to reply with, going on a thread about how wrong you are. So my Coke Machine of the week is not Matt George, not De'Aaron Fox, but just the entire situation, the entire thread of it, because I don't know. It's a really funny situation. This is just more my way.
It was an all-timer, and I'll just say this. Not just De'Aaron Fox, but a lot of athletes in general. They see a lot. They see a lot of things.
From you and me, Frank. They see
everything.
They see if you're Joe Schmo with four followers, like they might not see every tweet you have, but if you at somebody or if you put their name out there,
Yeah, I definitely think that they have a radar for these kinds of things. But it was a funny exchange. I enjoyed watching it. Matt is getting back in the good graces of everybody. He's trying to, at least. And God bless the guy for it. Love you, Matt. And, you know, we'll move forward. Matt will move forward. He'll be all right. But it was a fun time. The skates will live on.
They will absolutely live on. And I know for a fact people will not let him live it down, just as they have not let him live down the double down experience.
No.
I really feel the caveat of having to say that we both love Matt George. Matt is incredible. We worked with Matt here at Sactown when he was here at Sactown Sports, then KHK 1140. Matt is actually a really, really good dude. And I know, people hate on Matt more than I think, almost as much as any other media member. There's one specific that definitely gets a lot more hate, but
yes,
Matt absolutely does not deserve it. Matt busts his butt for every single thing he's done. And to see where he's at right now, like his following with the Locked On podcast, what he's doing with ABC 10, I'll be the first to tell you, and I think everyone would acknowledge that, like, I didn't see this path happening for Matt George, but he has absolutely carved out a great following for himself, and he is absolutely killing it. Like, he is also a prophet too, as Brendan puts in here, because Matt. Yeah, we had an experience in Vegas, but Matt,
right.
Matt is a 10 out of 10 dude.
Fellow king of the week, Matt George.
Right.
the skates comment aside, this man has, again, it's someone, like you said, we knew at 1140. We've tried to follow in his footsteps and kind of try to form our own road to get to where we are today, too. And he's been a big part of that. It's been fun to work with him. Him now. More closely even than we did when we were at 1140, because you and I were doing different things at 1140 at the time. We were more on the promotion side. Now we're in more of the broadcasting and the digital side. So it's fun to kind of be on that level playing field with Matt, or not quite level, because he's...
Don't get it twisted. We're coming for him.
He's mad. We
will take him down.
There's beef. There's still beef. We love him, but there's beef. Yeah. You know, there's beef. We don't have to go into it. There's literal beef, because we have hot dogs every game in the media dining room.
And just so everyone knows... This is, I don't know how public this information, actually it's super public because I definitely put my name on it, but I edited that Double Down music video. So if you want to give Matt George hate, you have to give me equal hate, because I made that thing happen and be released.
Look what you've created. Look what you created.
Literally.
Like, you're just watching everyone go at him, and you're just sitting there just with your feet kicked up. Like, I wonder who made
that
it.
Guy. What a dweeb, right? That guy.
Who made that video? I have no idea.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll do a live stream where I just like show all of the raw footage from that day, because there's some,
you should watch it with Matt clips. And like, you should do a live show with Matt.
That's a great idea.
Watch it. Matt calling Luca a clown. That was classic.
At least we didn't get a triple down, right?
Well, Luca got more than a triple down this week.
Woo! Boy, yeah. I mentioned on my show this week. Let's just wrap this.
Yes.
I talked on Kings Weekly this week about how I just like want to leave. Like, it was part of my New Year's resolutions. I don't want to talk about the past anymore. I don't want to talk about the Tyrese Haliburton Montrezl Sabonis trade. I don't want to talk about Luka over Marvin. How do you feel about just like that conversation of like people who are still to this day agonizing over the fact that we passed on Luka?
Like, should we move on? Or like, how do I feel people that are agonizing? Yeah, I mean, it's fair to be upset about it. I mean, I can't say that there isn't like a portion of my brain that still isn't like, wow, like I can't believe the Kings really did that. Because again, I'll say it every time I go on the podcast, I'm not afraid to admit I was Team Bagley when they drafted when they had the decision. I just thought the Kings should go with Bagley, and it's a decision that I have come to be very, very regretful of. I was young and stupid, but I think it's fair to be upset about it, but at a certain point you do have to move on. And while there always will be that Kings kind of tied to Luka aspect of it, the same way how the Blazers drafted Greg Oden over Kevin Durant, there are similar things that have happened in NBA history before. The Kings missed out on a probable Hall of Famer, probable MVP winner, and that's just it, got to move on. But Kings are in a good spot, playing their best basketball in 20 years, and I'm happy about that. But
I think that KD point is a great one. Like, you don't hear Blazer. I'm obviously not hanging out in Portland too much, but I don't hear Blazer fans constantly saying like, "Ugh, like we took Greg." I mean, I'm sure it definitely happened, and I'm sure it was for a brief period of time that they were like, "Oh, we really took Greg Oden over Kevin Durant." But you know, I think they're perfectly not totally happy with where they're at now. But you know, they got Damian Lillard, they got CJ McCollum. It's about not letting this one major decision be, you know, the catalyst for 15 more years of demise. Like, you can't, it's just more just like, like that happened. It sucked. I knew in the moment it sucked, but at some point you can't keep pointing at it like, ugh, like remember when we skipped on Luka, like let's just keep killing ourselves. And when he goes and has something that only Wilt Chamberlain, or not even Wilt Chamberlain, has done with a 60-20-10 game, my mind, the first thing that my mind goes to is not, oh, he should have done that for the Kings. Like, that's just so far removed that it's just like, I feel like people still have the, it's not, it's just like you got to move on at some point. Like, it's just, there, yeah, it's not doing you any good dwelling on the what ifs. Like, I don't know.
It's time. It's time to, you know, we have to have like a,
we're having fun now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, to bury a Kings Luka jersey or something. Just bury it somewhere in downtown Sacramento, and let's
move on. Luka also, I guarantee, if we would have had Luka, there would have been people. Luka's not like the funnest player to have on, like, individually for sure. I mean, watching him score 60-20-10, but like, you look at, you know, he's not he complains about every call. I'm not going to go here and say I wouldn't want Luka Doncic.
We're on a slippery slope, Chris.
Yeah, I know, right. What I'm saying is Marvin Bagley really wasn't that bad of a pick.
No. He didn't complain to the refs as much. No, I will say having Luka the player, the complaining would be tough to watch, but we all know it. We would.
No, I mean,
like,
absolutely.
It could be like the boogie thing. Give him the
just
call.
Just because you have Luka doesn't mean the Kings are 100% going to be championship winners in 2 years. Like, you see Dallas, and Dallas has not done a good job at all of building around him. But, you know, Dallas is below the Kings right now in the standings. And, you know, yes, they reached the Western Conference Finals last year, but, you know, that
we don't know
just because
happened.
You have Luka doesn't necessarily mean you have success.
And
if anyone would have ruined that experience, guess who it would have been? The Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, they would have found a way to ruin things. I mean, that means Fox is probably not here. That means Haliburton never was here. That means Sabonis trade doesn't happen. Maybe we're looking at Luka right now with Willie Cauley-Stein on his extension. And
oh yeah,
like, I don't know, Rudy Gay is still here. I don't know. It's something
right.
Like, so I don't know. But point is, Kings playing good basketball. Right. They won a great game, and we're moving on. We're on to Utah.
Yep, let's do it. That will be wrapping up today's live stream. Thank you all for everyone who hopped in here. Again, you can join us most Thursdays, if not every Thursday, right here on Sactown Sports 1140 Twitter page, on the Sactown Sports 1140 YouTube page as well. You can also catch the Return of the Roar podcast on anywhere that you get your podcast from. Spotify, Apple Music are the two main ones. You know, like Frank mentioned, they play Utah on Friday. They play the Memphis Grizzlies on Sunday on New Year's Day. Frank, happy New Year. Do you have any non-Kings related, what's it called? New Year's resolutions.
Happy New Year. Happy 2023. A New Year's resolution. I really will try to skip a second cookie at games.
That's a good one.
I think I'm going to break that one on January 4th, the first home game of the year. So I'm already anticipating breaking it. I'm going to break it.
I got
it.
You.
I'm not going to do it.
That's a good one. I'm going to try and get my ranch to salad ratio better in 2020.
We're going to work on that. We're going to clean up our media room dining habits.
Yep. That's our goal for 2023. Be sure to check next Thursday to see if we stay true to those resolutions. For Frankie Cardicelli, my name is Chris Watkins. Thank you all for listening. Go Kings, and bye-bye. Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Brighten your home with big savings at Menards. Combine stylish lighting with LED technology with Fight Electric Smart Color Changing Light Bulbs. They have a full range of colors, allowing you to choose the perfect one to suit your mood. Say big on all Fight Lighting Smart Home products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.